Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us in the studio today for Medical Monday is Dr. Alan Carl. Dr. Carl is internationally renowned for innovative surgical treatment and research of spine diseases and disorders in both adults and children. He specializes in scoliosis, spine trauma, spinal cord injury, spine deformity, disc herniation, and degenerative diseases of the spine. He pioneered and performs a minimally invasive treatment for lumbar spinal stenosis called X-STOP. Dr. Carl earned his medical degree at SUNY Buffalo and completed residencies at SUNY Medical Center and Bellevue Hospital Center in New York. He completed a fellowship in spinal surgery at the Toronto Hospital in Toronto, Canada. He's board certified by the Americans Board of Surgery. He has been recently honored by the Spinal Cord Society and by recognition of the Congress via Paul Tonko. Dr. Carl, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. The number, if anybody needs to call and wants to, is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can just email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, Doc, you have been recognized internationally, nationally as a top back surgeon. Are things getting worse with our backs?
I think our society is changing the way we wear, and because of that, the perception is that we're not taking the same care of our backs as we used to, which makes us more vulnerable.
Give me an example of what taking care of our backs might involve.
I don't think we get the same amount of activity and exercise any longer. Uh-huh. And because of that, we don't really make our muscles get activity that would help to assist the support that we normally would need. Very simple things. We don't hang up clothes in the backyard anymore. We don't get up off the couch to change the channel on the TV anymore. A lot of times when we go grocery shopping, it's just to put our groceries in the car and drive home. So I think our activities have become cushier.
Interesting. Well, 1-800-348-2551. You are operating on scoliosis. Now, scoliosis, as I know all too well, is a sort of a curvature of the spine. How do we get that?
Well, no one knows. It's still an enigma. People have done studies since the 1960s to try to understand the source. And unfortunately, it still evades our ability to know.
Do we get it because, is there any genetic, if one's mother had it or one's father had it, are we more likely to have it?
Well, recently there has been some indication that there is a genetic predisposition now with the fact that we can unlock the genome. The folks at the University of Utah have been able to identify that there are probably at least 53 genetic loci that code for scoliosis.
Wow.
So it's very complex.
Wow. And how do you fix it?
Well, we don't necessarily fix it. We treat it. We can't take a spine that is deformed and keep it with its same degree of function and make it straight. So we actually straighten it by putting implants in that take away the motion but make the spine straighter.
So when you say implant, what do you mean?
Typically metal rods, hooks, and screws to support the structure and essentially try to realign it in a better way.
And out of 100%, what would you say your success ratio is?
Well, I think that's a matter of what you determine as success. We seldom can make the spine ramrod straight because there's a sensitive spinal cord inside. The average is about 50 to 70% improvement in the alignment as we straighten.
And when that happens, doctor, the pain is lessened.
Well, a lot of times this is not only a component of pain, it can also be a cosmetic issue as well.
Okay. Will, our lines are loaded up. We have one free phone, believe it or not. So I think a lot of people want to talk to you, Dr. Alan Carl. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay. Welcome back, Jim. You're on.
What type of suture material is used in attempting to reattach severed nerves?
We usually use typical synthetic materials. They exist and they are supposedly very seldom causing any reaction, so they're somewhat inert. There's chromic, there's Vicryl. Those are the typical ones that are being used.
What do you ask, Jim?
I was just wondering.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim.
Welcome.
Yep. Let's go to John in Gilderland. John, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Alan. Hi, Dr. Carl. I had transverse myelitis back in 2008, and he told me I wasn't going to get out of a wheelchair. I went from a wheelchair to a walker to two crutches to one crutch, and now I'm walking, holding a crutch, not really using it, just, you know, getting around pretty good. Can I expect any more advanced improvement, or has I come to an end, or is there something I can do medically to prove myself?
Okay, but doctor, the one thing I want to tell you about this program is when somebody uses a term like transverse myelitis, we have no idea what it means, so you have to tell us to begin with.
So transverse myelitis is an injury or a dysfunction of the spinal cord that causes you to become paralyzed. We're not completely sure why it happens. Sometimes it could be that the blood supply to the spinal cord is abnormal. Sometimes it could be a virus that affects the spinal cord and damages it. And a lot of times those are very difficult problems to address because they happen so infrequently. I don't know your case in particular, but it sounds like you're very fortunate that you've had this much recovery.
I still walk with a stilted gait.
Yeah. Again, it's very hard to know whether you will have a normal, smooth gait pattern return. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like if you were to say I was 100% paralyzed, it sounds like maybe you're 85% back, which a lot of people don't get. The more you're active, the more you continue to exercise, the better off you'll be. We would not be able to assess whether you'd be having recovery. Our party line is that what you have by a year to a year and a half is what you have, although that doesn't always follow. There are some people who can get recovery for up to even 5 years, but it gets slower with each passing year.
John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Let's go to George in Amsterdam. George, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Okay, George. How are you?
Good. I have a question. I'm actually calling for my son-in-law, who actually can't call right now. But he's had two spine surgeries. He's had a fusion of three vertebrae. I don't know what they call them on the lower back. He's now about 8 months after the last surgery, and his pain is continuous. He's had CAT scans and everything, and they say that the fusion is fine, and they're mentioning about going in again and just taking all the hardware out that they put in his back. The suggestion was made that possibly he should see a neurologist. That's about all the information I can give you, but this was an injury, and I'm just groping, trying to see if there's anything I can find out to help this man. He's 46 years old.
Okay, man. Let's go to the doctor. Doc?
Sometimes we perform surgeries and the surgery is unsuccessful. The surgery, if it is successful, really just takes bones that we think may be painful because of the motion and stops the motion and thereby hopefully stops the pain. So if his pain remains, then stopping the motion of those vertebrae was probably not the source of his pain. So it probably means that further investigation needs to be performed. Unfortunately, with our medical knowledge, we can't take care of all the pains that could potentially arise.
Let's talk, Doc, if we can, about some definitions. Stenosis?
So stenosis is a very hard definition in the medical community because it means different things to different people. Stenosis actually means tightness, and that means that the space where the spinal cord lives and the nerves live have become narrowed on the basis of arthritic changes, or sometimes you can be born with some degree of stenosis that becomes more pronounced as you age. The problem is that when we go for a study, like an MRI, the radiologist describes stenosis, and that's a visual assessment, meaning that they can actually look at the MRI and think that the space where the nerves live is narrower. But a lot of times that is not going to help back pain if you do surgery. It only helps leg pain. So the clinical definition of stenosis is people who have a tight spinal canal making less breathing room for the nerves that give you buttock and leg pain. And when we operate for stenosis, what we expect to have happen is that you get relief of your buttock and leg pain. It may make your back pain actually worse. Mm. So stenosis is a very complex and difficult diagnosis that really needs better ferreting out to explain really what it means to most people.
After he had the first surgery, the leg pain, which was a tingling down the legs and into the feet, that pretty much went away about 3 months after the surgery. But the butt pain remained, and they'd done some investigation, and they found that some of the hardware that was used had shifted. That prompted the second surgery. And it wasn't quite as bad as they thought it was going to be, but they'd done what they had to do. And then, of course, he started to recover, but then all of a sudden, not only did the butt pain return, but the leg pain also returned.
George, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Kathy in Bennington. Kathy, you're on. Oh, no, Kathy, you have to stay right where you are. We're
okay.
going to take a little short 7-second break or so, and we'll be right back, okay?
Thanks.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, offering clinical research trials towards FDA approval of anti-cancer drugs. When experience matters most, NewYorkOncology.com for a list of clinical trials. Capital Roots, formerly Capital District Community Gardens, announcing their new home at the Urban Grow Center. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org. And Ellis Medicine, a comprehensive healthcare network served by more than 600 physicians, reinventing healthcare one patient at a time. 1-844-518-DOCS for appointments and referrals.
And we're back with Dr. Alan Carl. So let's go to Kathy. Kathy, you're on the line. Your turn.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Shartok and Dr. Carl. I have a loved one in his 80s. He has disc deterioration in his spine. And I was just wondering if, number one, is there anything to replace disc material these days in your spine? And does spinal decompression offer even temporary relief from some of the pain?
So in the early 2000s, there was this push to replace discs, and pretty much the FDA mandated that you would need to study these disc replacements in parallel to fusions because fusions were the accepted mode of care. And they did a very rigorous study for quite a number of different companies who were trying to identify that these were effective. Eventually, they okayed 3 or 4, but it was a very expensive proposition. And when the next step arose, it was, will your insurance company pay for it? And many times insurance companies don't pay for what would be considered to be experimental. So then there was this confusion as to whether if it's FDA approved, does that mean it's experimental or not? And insurance companies felt that maybe it was. They went to Medicare and Medicaid, which is typically the body that determines if they'd pay for things. And when they went to Medicare, Medicare said, who would you put this disc replacement in? And they said, well, we'd put it in people who are between 20 and 60. And Medicare said, well, we have an answer for you. We take care of people who are older than 65, so you're on your own. And insurance companies then mandated that since the results that were shown by the FDA were very marginally improved with disc replacements compared to fusions, they were reluctant to give their thumbs up. And the medical community said, but you don't understand. This is going to really work well. It's going to maintain mobility in the future. 10 years down the road, you're going to see that these patients are doing much better than the ones we fused. And their response was, well, we'll see in 10 years, and you can show us those results at that time. So right now, the spine technologies have pretty much not advanced as much as they possibly could have. And we're not sure if that's good or bad, actually.
Okay, a couple of things. A fusion, we did stenosis before, but a fusion is you take out the disc, yes, and you marry one section of the spine to another?
Well, a fusion is stopping motion.
Yeah.
And you can do it through the front of the spine, which would be removal of the disc, or you can essentially stop the two little joints in the back of the spine. And God made a very complex structure because at each level, the disc moves in the front and two little joints move in the back. So every time you have movement of one level, three areas have to move. And that's an additive phenomenon because you've got five lumbar vertebra, 12 thoracic vertebra, and seven cervical vertebra. So, you know, do the math and you can see that it's a very complex structure.
So when you do one, does that affect everything else above and below on the line?
So in the 80s and 90s, when we first started doing this surgery, the answer was no. And now the big buzzword, since there have been many more spine surgeons minted around the country and around the world, we now describe that as what we call adjacent segment disease, meaning that if you take away motion at one area, someplace else has to take over the slack.
Doesn't sound like an easy job.
A lot of this really depends upon how healthy you are and how well you continue to take care of your body.
Yeah. Okay, Kathy, anything else?
Well, I had that additional little thing about decompression and if that could provide even some temporary relief from pain.
A decompression surgically means that you remove tissue, bone that may be pressing into nerves. So if you did that, you would assume that the patient's leg and buttock symptoms would be better. But in actuality, you're destabilizing the spine, so there's a chance that their back pain may be no better, possibly worse.
And so exactly what is decompression again?
Decompression essentially gives more breathing room to the nerves that we think may be being pressed or inhibited by arthritic spurs or discs or things like that.
And how do you see those nerves? You see them in a CAT scan? You see them in a MRI? I mean, how does it work?
So in the past, they were seen most optimally with what was called a myelogram and CAT scan. A myelogram was very formidable, which is why people didn't want to have that study done.
You injected some dye into your spine?
So it was first an oil-based dye, which was very, very thick, and they would actually have to suck it back out, and it was extremely painful. So most people opted to just live with their pain. But then they made that into a water-based dye, which made it more easy to tolerate. But then when MRIs came about in the 1980s, that's when everybody was getting an MRI, and they showed a lot of disease. And unfortunately, we were sort of brainwashed into thinking that the MRI showed us where the problem was. And the MRI shows us where the changes are. It doesn't show us where the problem is.
I'm sorry, I'm a little slow here on the distinction.
It's sort of like if we brought in your 57 Chevy and you pulled up the hood and you said to the guy, it's just not working right. Which part is it? And he would probably say, I don't know, there are a lot of old-looking parts here. We're going to need to do some diagnostics.
Kathy, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Jim in Malta. Okay, Jim in Malta, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Jim, could you speak up a bit? I'm having trouble here.
Okay, I said thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Okay, I'm 70 years old, and I've just finished up about a year of treatment with a local orthopedic surgery place. And years ago, I was diagnosed with stenosis, and about a year ago, I started to get pain in my hip when I run or hike uphill. So over the past year, I've received, 3 MRIs, 2 injections in my spine, and 5 in my hip. And nothing's worked. So at the end, the third orthopedic surgeon I saw said, you know, it could be a lot of things. You probably just have to live with it and just don't hike uphill anymore. Then subsequent to that, I saw my GP in my annual physical, and he said he thought it might be bursitis, and I was sent to a physiologist. So now I'm in the process of just doing exercises. But he didn't seem too confident that it was that either. I'm just wondering, is there a point where they just don't know and you just got to live with it?
There are certainly cases where we don't have scientific knowledge or medical knowledge to be able to take care of all of the components. But again, there are other reasons why you can have back pain. Your pelvis joints are very close to your spine, so they're called the sacroiliac joints.
Yeah, this is my hip. Actually, it's from my hip down the side of my leg. And it's funny, when I go into the doctor, I can point to the exact spot where it hurts. And they don't seem to know. I was so frustrated the last time I was in. I felt like the old comedy act where a guy goes to the doctor and says, doctor, my arm hurts when I do this. And the doc says, well, don't do it anymore.
Hey, Jim, hold on for a minute because I've got a lot of people behind you. I want to give the doctor a chance to talk to you. Go ahead.
Okay.
So the concern here is that the diagnostics need to be more optimized. So if you have hip pain, you should be complaining of pain in your groin. And if you have no pain in your groin, then it's highly unlikely that it's your hip as the source.
Oh, because
if it's your butt, well, that could be your SI joint, that could be your sciatic nerve, that could be the movable parts of your lower back, that could be your muscles and ligaments. So from the standpoint of picking apart and doing the diagnostics, that's like bringing that 57 Chevy in and having the mechanic try to assess which parts are the source.
Hey, Jim, we're going to try to get to other people. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Let's go to Mary Ellen in Kingston. Mary Ellen, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Shartok. I love your show.
Thank you.
Dr. Call. Hi, Dr. Call. I have a question. I'll try to make it quick. I have a history of back issues for about 20 years. I'm 60 years old. 15 months ago, I had a laminectomy. I'm diagnosed with stenosis, severe arthritis, herniated discs, scoliosis. So they did the laminectomy, and unfortunately, it didn't work. I'm in excruciating pain every day of my life. I take pain meds. I do pain management. Nothing helps. It's my right leg, which is killing me. And the lower back I could live with because I've had that for 20 years at least. The leg is what's killing me. Doctor, what's your opinion? They told me that it should have been fused. Another surgeon said that. I wasn't fused with a laminectomy. What do you think?
Okay, before we proceed, I want some definitions. A laminectomy is the cleaning out, yes, of some of the material. Go ahead.
So there's a component of the spine. If you've ever looked at a picture of the spine, there's this fin that sort of sits in the back of the spine.
Yeah.
The medical term for that is lamina.
Mm-hmm.
So a laminectomy means removing that fin that's covering the spinal sac with the nerves in it.
Okay.
So that's what a laminectomy is.
Now a fusion.
A fusion is essentially bringing the bones together with some sort of support. Sometimes it's screws, sometimes it's screws and rods, and then taking bone or bone-like material and hoping that that would then sort of join together so that those bones can no longer move. I would also point out that a laminectomy is in the family of what we would consider to be decompressions. So a decompression is one of the forms of decompression is a laminectomy.
And a laminectomy, doctor, is usually regarded, I'm making this stuff up, of course, but usually regarded as preliminary to fusion. In other words, it's a lesser operation.
A laminectomy is actually something that you would use to try to take care of what we call nerve pain. So there are two basic problems you get with your spine. You get structural pain and you get electrical pain. Mm-hmm. So electrical pain you want to do a Roto-Rooter job on, and structural pain you want to put some 2x4s next to.
Okay, so the first is the laminectomy, right?
Not necessarily. It really depends upon what your symptoms are.
Okay. So, but do doctors usually try spine surgeons' laminectomies before they got a fusion?
Depends who the spine surgeon is.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go to Mary. No, we did that. Let's go to, Lima in Liberty, New York. Okay, you're on.
Yes, you said it quite well. Hello, Dr. Carl and host. What I would like to ask you is, have you heard of the book, You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Madam? In other words, we're using the mind to help the body. It's by Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's quite renowned. I understand he has meetings in corporations to enlighten people that a lot can be done, and he evidently seemed to have power. Are you there?
We are, but somebody's trying to get on the other line.
My phone is being interrupted, yeah. That's one. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. It's, well, the mind apparently
Well, yeah, and Dr. Sarno preceded that, and so there's a whole group of people who are saying...
What do you think? Is it worth my while studying Dr. Joe Dispenza's?
I'm not familiar with who that person is.
Okay.
There are now people who are believing that placebos may actually be helpful. Because if it works for you, what does it matter what it is?
Sure.
Exactly.
You do know Dr. Sarno's work, right?
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And what it is, you tell your mind to heal you. Now, I never went that route, but it's interesting. Now, number two, there is a doctor in New York City. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention his name. And I have friends who had various conditions from knees to backs and stuff. He uses cadavers legally. He's a surgeon on Riverside Drive, and he actually did a knee surgery on a friend of mine who was not to walk again, who's now walking five dogs and running. That's a thought. Is any of that possibility lie in cadavers to fix backs rather than using synthetic parts?
So you bring up a good question.
Mm.
First of all, we do use bone from cadaver routinely since the 1980s. And it's actually called allograft. And that allograft has been industrially changed in many different ways. There have been some knee surgeons who have actually been sort of pushing the envelope, because sometimes in bad knee accidents in young people, you just can't give them a knee replacement. They'll wear it out. So they actually get a cadaver who has been typed, similar to what you would for a kidney transplant. And
right,
they put this knee in. As far as the spine is concerned, there was a study done at the University of South Carolina, I want to say within the past 10 years, where they actually took young dogs, transplanted the young dog's spine material into old dogs in hopes that they would rejuvenate them. And what they found out is that when they sacrificed the old dogs, the juices of that old dog made the new dog's spine turn into an old dog's spine.
Oh, dear.
I can also tell you that the mainland Chinese have been using cadaver disc replacements in the neck. And I take that back. The guys in Hong Kong have been doing that. And they did present it with a lot of fanfare, I want to say, about 8 years ago. And maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, I bumped into one of them. I said, how are they doing? He said, they're okay, but we're not going to be presenting it any further. So I think that there probably is still some impediments for
now,
that.
Now, when you get tooth inserts, they use cadaver material.
Sometimes they may,
yeah. Okay.
See how interesting? I'm glad I called you.
Oh, we're glad too, Lema. Thank you very much for
doing it. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work. I wish I could sit and talk with you for hours.
Okay,
bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Let's go to Ray in Great Barrington. Hello, Ray. Welcome back.
Hi. How are you? Okay. I'm 67. In 1966, I had a motorcycle accident, multiple major orthopedic trauma. I believe two lumbar vertebrae would have received a lateral or vertical compression. I wore a brace and whatnot, and my whole body miraculously, with all the injuries, everything was great for decades, and I ran the ridges and rivers, and now my back is killing me.
Okay, Ray, you got to go. We're up against the break.
I have had peripheral, as I call it, cortisone shots. They did not help. I wonder if an epidural shots would help, laser, or what is next.
Okay, Doc, we got to keep this short because we have a break in a second here.
I'm not sure that I can answer that in a very quick fashion. I think you really need to have your whole situation assessed in a more global fashion.
How is that done?
I would ask your family doctor to find somebody who has a subspecialty in spine and ask them to sort of be more rigorous in trying to pick things apart.
And you have a subspecialty in spine, right?
I do.
You do. Okay, thanks, Ray. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Urgent Care Centers of Middletown Medical, providing walk-in medical care with no appointment, daytime, evening, and weekend hours in Middletown, Ellenville, and now in Chester. MiddletownMedical.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Waterville Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. And Edward Garbosik, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed@HavikinWealthStrategies.com.
And we are back, and we are delighted to have you all with us. Let's go to Diane in Saugerties. Diane, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Diane. You're on.
Thank you. I heard you talking before about decompression and the surgical option. I had great success years ago with a lumbar traction machine and no surgery. Is that considered decompression as well?
I think that lumbar traction was used in the 1950s with some degree of speckled success. So it fell into disfavor. And then they came back in the 90s with a much more stupendous-looking device, and they changed it to spinal decompression, which is traction. And again, since I've mentioned that there are sometimes things that we don't know, this might be one of those incidences that this works for certain groups of people. And if it does for you, then you've avoided the need for any surgery.
Do you do traction in your hospital?
No.
Okay.
This was a very low-tech thing that the insurance company bought for me, and I use at home.
Well, if it works for you, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it did. It was great.
Diane, thanks for the success story. Appreciate it.
Okay,
yeah.
Bye.
We heard from Jamie on the internet, who wanted to know by email. I understand that oxygen infusion chambers has been very beneficial for both joint restoration and pain relief. Has insurance rejection and Medicare rules changes or will change to make such treatments available? Do you think they are effective?
I really couldn't give you an answer. I don't have enough insight into that.
No answer. Okay, thanks a lot. We're going to go to Ann in Schenectady. Ann, you're on. Hi, Anne. Anne, are you there? Anne going once. Anne going twice. Anne is gone. Let's go to Bridget in Waterford. Bridget, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. I've suffered from scoliosis since about age 9. I have like a 40-degree curvature on the top and bottom in the thoracic and lumbar spine. And I'm 26 now. My husband and I are starting to talk about starting a family. And I've had thrown towards me possible surgical options. And I'm wondering if I should do that preemptively before I become pregnant, because I know that there are some concerns with scoliosis and pregnancy and pain and all of that. I'm wondering if you have some insight there.
And do you have pain now?
I do, yeah, chronic back pain. I get sciatic pain down the right-hand side.
So sciatic pain would be indicative of the lower part of your spine, which more than likely is not directly related to your scoliosis. So if we give you a straight spine, you're probably still going to have the buttock and leg pain. So I'm not completely sure that the solution would be to correct your scoliosis. You really need to understand where the pain may be emanating, because it may be indirectly related to the fact that you've had scoliosis since age 9, and fixing your scoliosis may be too late to fix this problem. The more you can stay conditioned, the better off you'll be. Undergoing a surgical management is a big undertaking, and I think you should have that done when you've exhausted every non-operative means.
But isn't a disc sometimes the issue in this leg pain?
It very well could be, but it's not necessarily that you could correct the scoliosis and fix the disc.
Right. Well, in some cases, people fix discs, but they still have the scoliosis, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Bridget, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. There are two free phones. You could be on one of them. Let's go to Jean in Cheshire. Okay, Jean, you're on.
Okay. I have spinal stenosis, and a neurosurgeon was going to do surgery on it several years ago, but he was hesitant because he thought maybe the hardware might not stay in my bones, since I had osteopenia, and I have arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and I take several different medications like Remicade and methotrexate and prednisone, and I have a few other heart medications for blood pressure. But I don't think he was concerned about those. But he was concerned about doing the surgery, and he thought, let's wait a few months for something new to come along, and hopefully that we wouldn't have to use the hardware.
That's a great question, don't you think, Doctor, because of the osteoporosis opinia question.
How old are you, ma'am?
71.
So, again, as we age, there's a natural change of all of our structures.
Mm-hmm.
When we start to add medications that make us healthier in some degrees, it makes us healthier in other respects as well.
Mm-hmm.
Surgery should only be done when you've exhausted all conservative alternatives. People who do have thin bones are more apt to have a less optimal outcome. The question is whether the surgery should be done for buttock and leg pain or for back pain or for both. And then the real dilemma is, you can do those surgeries forever and ever, and if you can't get going and be conditioned after the surgery within a very short period of time, you'll identify that things have gone in a negative direction all over again.
Mm-hmm. So there's no new wonder procedure?
There are many new procedures that are available, and unfortunately, a lot of them are untested.
Okay.
Gene, thanks for calling. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Well, let's go to Anne in Schenectady. Anne, you're on.
About 3 months ago, I had an MRI which showed a bulging disc. And I've had physical therapy, and I was given exercises to do. And I am much, much better. But I'd like to know how the physical therapy and the exercises really change whatever in my spine, it was the lumbar area, that made the improvement?
So a bulging disc is sort of like having a bad shock absorber on your car. If you drive your car enough, you're going to get a bad shock absorber. So if you're beyond age 30, you probably should have at least one bulging disc.
Uh-huh.
And so that's something that's expected. A lot of times we sort of do the same thing every day, day in and day out, which means that those muscle groups are in good shape. It's when you do something a little out of the ordinary that you end up sort of stressing areas that may actually have not been in bad shape to begin with, but I can't tell you how many times when March comes around, men flock to the office who are 50 years old and say, I picked up my golf clubs and my back is killing me. And really, the answer to that is, why did you stop swinging the club all winter long? And their answer typically is because there was snow on the ground. So if you don't get the areas conditioned that you ignore, you're vulnerable. And that's essentially what you may be saying, that the therapist was helpful in giving you insight into how to better buttress the areas of your spine that are more vulnerable. So physical therapy should not necessarily stop with the physical therapist. It would be prudent for you to continue to exercise.
I am doing the exercises, and I will be more faithful.
Thank you, Ann.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Gail in Ghent. That's alliteration. Gail in Ghent. You're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Some 30 years ago, 30-some years ago, when I had scoliosis diagnosed at 15, and I was pregnant, and I was about 8 months along, and I was sitting down, and something happened in my back. And it was very strange. It didn't hurt. It scared me because something moved. And I didn't know what it was, and it went away. And flash forward to 5 years later, when nobody had ever measured my height, and a friend said, you are no way 5'4", and insisted that I measure, and I was 5'5". I had grown an inch, and I went back to that experience and figured out that my, what turned out to be 9 1/4 pound baby that I had carried in my little short-waisted area had straightened my back.
I'm not sure I know how to answer that. I don't think that we'd be able to give any medical support to that.
Really?
So that would be something that would be in the Journal of Irreproducible Results.
Well, it happened,
yeah,
and
no,
I was taller than
you know,
I had ever been before, well, and I can't come up with any other reason I would get taller.
Well, Gail, I don't think anybody is saying that it didn't happen. We're just saying you can't find it in the Journal of Unreproducible Medical Results.
I also would like to say that I have a theory about why scoliosis happens just from my own, and it's also not provable, but it could be researched. And that is that often children are put on their spines before their spines are ready for them to be on them. And I have a feeling that might, at least in some cases,
you mean on their backs? You mean put on
on their spine. They're put upright before they're ready to be upright with their weight on their spine.
Okay. I can see from the doctor's look that while he's interested in what you're
saying. He doesn't believe that
either. No, I didn't say that. While he's interested, he doesn't have a response because he doesn't really have that dealing with that. Thanks very much. Right.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. And we'll go to Mary in Poughkeepsie, but before I do, if some smart person wants to get one in, Mary is the last blinking light. If you want to get in, 1-800-348-2551. No promises. Okay, Mary, you're on.
Okay, thank you. My son is 39, and he herniated a disc in a jet skiing accident about 5 years ago. And right now, he's suffering from numbness in his leg all the way down to his toes. So he can't even walk correctly because he can't feel his toes, and he's in a lot of pain. He can't sleep at night, and I just wondered, it's lumbar 5, I just wondered what he should do to correct this problem. He's only 39, and I'd hate to have him have surgery. Is there other options?
Well, again, he probably should seek care with a spinal specialist to help better understand the source of the pain. If the inside of the nerve is all irritated, rubbed raw, and damaged, the likelihood of seeing success from surgery becomes much lower. If the outside pressure is the source, then sometimes surgery could be helped. An epidural injection that sort of focuses directly at that site and gives relief, but it's too short-lived. And maybe if you do that on a number of different occasions, each time reconfirming the results of those injections, then maybe it would be acceptable to pursue surgical management. But the surgery, if it's successful, only relieves the pain. If you don't exercise, the likelihood of finding success will be short-lived.
Mm. There's not a procedure where they can, like, shave. He said they can shave off the area that's squeezing out from the disc so it doesn't press on the nerve. That's not...
So I think a lot of people misinterpret that statement of shaving the disc. Again, we don't have shavers that mm-hmm. shave the disc. We do go in there and make the space from the disc a little smaller. We typically don't take discs out in its entirety for sciatic type symptoms. But I would defer that to the specialist who feels that they would give you insight into how they perceive they would do the intervention. Some of them may describe that as shaving.
Mary from Poughkeepsie. Thank you, dear. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Let's go to Pat in East Greenbush. Pat in East Greenbush, you're on.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Okay.
Okay, so I have a question. I have pain in my buttock area, down my leg, like a burning sensation, so typical sciatica. I know I have degenerative disc, but I also feel like a lot of the pain is coming from my hip. And I'm wondering how you can tell if your problem is primarily your back or your hip.
First of all, it would be prudent for you to have a history and physical exam performed by a physician who helps people with these problems. After that was determined, and if they felt it could be your hip, what you may do is ask a specialist to put Novocaine and cortisone right into the ball and socket. And if you come out with a big smile on your face, then it's your hip. And if you don't come out with a big smile on your face, it's something else. And then you could investigate the other areas in your back in a similar fashion. Think of the Novocaine and cortisone shots a little bit like WD-40. Hmm. So it would be in a way of trying to assess where your rustier parts are that may be the source of your symptomatology.
Okay, Pat, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. Let's go to Joyce in Poughkeepsie. Joyce, I believe you're going to be the last person, so can you make it short? Go ahead.
Yes, yes, I can. Well, I'm old and I'm rusty, but I was reading an article online, and they're doing so much with stem cells. And in there was information on stem cell research for repairing back issues.
Okay, I want you to stop right there, Joyce, because we are running out of time.
Yeah,
Doctor,
that's it.
She raises a very interesting question about the potential for stem cell research in backs.
So, you know, that becomes a very problematic area because of ethics and religion, et cetera. There are people who are injecting stem cells into various areas of the spine. There's no scientific proof whether it works or doesn't work. The ones who are becoming complications from this are sort of higher profile. Until somebody can figure out a way to study stem cells and get good research out of it, it's still going to be an unknown. And in a way, it may take many years for that to happen because stem cell treatments are not necessarily industry driven just yet.
Okay. Thank you, doctor, for that. We are about out of time. My apologies to Rick in Rhinebeck, who we are not going to be able to talk to today. I want to thank Dr. Alan Carl for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Topperson, announcing their Get Relief, Give Relief campaign. Donations of Topperson to pain clinics for persons in need. Topperson.com. Thanks to our engineers, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz and Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. If you want to make a donation to WAMC and have it count for the IRS, do it now. Stay tuned now for a news update.